This is Jay from Broadcast Girantia, Hour 1. Our guest today is Curtis Cooperman, the site creator of HelloEarth.info. Hello, Curtis. Are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Hello, Jay.
Hi. How are you?
Well, I'm good. It's nice to have me on your broadcast, and you're actually doing the broadcast, Girantia.
Well, welcome. And thanks again for taking the time to do this, Curtis. So there's a lot of things we want to cover. So what do you say we just jump right into this?
Well, all right. You said you wanted to start from the beginning I met Riley.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the beginning. So why don't you tell me a little bit about how you met Riley and what happened? And right from the beginning, for somebody who's never heard this before, tell us the story, Curtis.
All right. Well, basically, I grew up next to an airport, and I loved flying. And as I got older, I liked all kind of flying.
Really?
I thought spacecraft were really interesting. I used to go to these UFO meetings once a month down in Trenton, New Jersey, and this fellow, Bob Urey, he had these drawings in his hand, these 8.5 by 11 sheets of paper. He may have had 40 of them or something, and he was going to have a conference in Philadelphia. This is back in November of 1994.
Okay.
And he said, then this fellow Riley Martin drew all these symbols. Well, I call them symbols, but they didn't know what to call them at the time. And for a while there, they were calling them crop circles. And I said, no, these aren't crop circles. These are on paper. But very interesting. And they all look so radically different that it looked like different people drew them.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, who drew all these? And he said, oh, Riley Martin drew them. I said, well, who else drew them? Oh, he drew them all. So he said he was going to have them at this meeting, but what really caught my eye was, or my ear, plus these drawings, was because they all had a theme of threes and sevens, but they were all so different. And he said that he also wrote a 600-page manuscript, and he was a cotton sharecropper. Well, that didn't make any sense, and usually things with round UFOs are kind of puzzling. But, so I went to the meeting, and that was about a month later, and I met Riley, and I had to see his 600-page manuscript. How could this guy who doesn't really know how to read or write something more than a page? So either it was going to be nothing or it was going to be amazing. So I would be headed down to Philadelphia every day to try and see this thing, and he hands it to me one day. It comes in like a shoe-sized box. It turned out to be 593 pages, which is 600 pages to me, and I read the first paragraph, and then I read another paragraph deep into it, then I read another paragraph really deep into it, and I was just amazed, and so I was able to start typesetting that manuscript, and I was always hoping that it would always stay interesting. He would never start talking about when he was in a little league or something. It was never really all about him. It was about this alien named Tan that was on this huge, he called it at the time a mothership out near Saturn.
Now, Curtis, I don't want to interrupt you.
Yeah, go ahead, Jay.
But you're referring to the book called Coming of Tan.
Yes, well, okay. That's what the title was, The Coming of Tan. And it was, as I typed it, I was just amazed. So I was into this for like about, I don't know why I want to tell you this story, but my neighbor came over and she said, hey, you want to breakfast? And I said, well, no, I'm really busy. Can't really. What happened if I bring sandwiches over? Well, okay. So she brings sandwiches over and we're talking, and all of a sudden she says, oh my gosh, I nearly forgot. I woke up this morning and I didn't know why. I went, oh my gosh, because I remember I woke up this morning and I didn't know why. I saw the moon, And I looked at my computer. I thought I could get to work. I said, no, just go back to sleep and get some more sleep and then put a good day in. And but it turned out that there was a saucer over the Delaware River, and it scared my neighbor's boyfriend. And she said, oh, here, call Doug. Call Doug at work. So I called him, and the secretary said he wasn't in. I left a message that I just called, and he calls back. And I said, well, how long did you see it, Doug? And he said, oh, for about 5 seconds. And I said, well, that's how long Christine said she saw it. How about? And he said, well, maybe 15 seconds. I got to go. And then he stopped talking to me for 6 months. But everything about Riley was really unusual. And so I ended up publishing The Coming of Tan. And I got him on a lot of radio shows. And, well, actually 217 radio shows and 3 television shows. And one of those shows was Howard Stern at WXRK. And, you know, that went on for like 10 years. Every once in a while, we'd get on Howard Stern again. And Howard found Riley extremely fascinating, and he was amazed at his voice and his use of the language, because that's what fascinated me about Riley's writing. Is, use of the English language would just really compel you to keep reading. And I had people say that, well, like this one publisher down in Washington, D.C., he said when he got the book, he opened it up, and then he went through the rest of his mail, and then he put down the rest of his mail. He picked up the book, and he says, I never stood up for another 10 hours. He just read through the whole thing. And so one of these radio shows that I got Riley on was a show that, well, actually, one of the people who have listened to Riley before, he called this TV producer and this guy. So anyway, he calls me. It's Patrick, can't think of his last name right now. I just wasn't ready to even tell you about Patrick, but anyway, I told him, well, he was in Kentucky, and I said, well, Riley's going to be speaking in Ohio, and he said, well, he's going to drive there, and he's not going to even introduce himself, he's just going to listen and leave. Well, he was very impressed with Riley and put Riley on his show, so he was another radio show that we were on, and then the people he was working with took over and took Riley away from him, and then Riley wanted to have me on the radio with him. And anyway, so they ran off with Riley for a little while, and I'm not really telling the story very well, but I'm just skipping through this thing really fast. But Riley just wanted to have me on the show, and they just told him, oh, well, we need to buy $11,000 worth of equipment, and on and on and on. So Riley seemed to just go by the wayside for a moment, and then out of the blue, I get this email from a fella in Maui that he said that that he knew Riley and he met him on the mothership. So I ended up talking to him. This is Michael from Maui, and I talked to him for 45 minutes a couple times, and then I decided to do a podcast with Michael and see where it went. And Michael, the very first hour with Michael, he told the whole story. The whole story. So that he was, he lives in Maui, and he walked outside and he looked up in the sky and he asked for God to show himself. He wanted to see a representative of God that showed themselves to him. And he said the star came out of the sky and just came down to him. And these two beings turned out to be Tan and Nella. Say, come with us, we'll bring you back. So Michael ended up going out near Saturn with him, and he had this amazing story to tell in this first hour. Never mentioned the Urantia book the first hour, but so when the whole hour was over, we recorded another hour a week later, and that's when he told the story that when he was up there on the mothership and they were anyway, these two huge Neptuniums came up to him, and they moved aside, and standing behind them were this tall blonde man, and he said to Michael, "You look confused." Michael says, "Well, I am a little confused. I went in my backyard in Maui looking for God to show himself, and these beings brought me up here, and I went into this meeting with these purple elders, these older people in these purple robes, and they asked me to do certain things on Earth for them, and I agreed, and my head's spinning. Yes, I'm spinning. Can you imagine, Jay?"
Yeah, now this mothership is the architectural sphere that's in the Urantia book. That is what Michael was told, or Michael actually points to that in the Urantia book, saying that this is the New Jerusalem, the mothership, that the Urantia book is talking about, if I understand it correctly.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly right. That's...
And both Michael and Riley were on this ship at the same time together. Or at least they bumped into each other.
Together, and Michael said that that Riley remembered him, and Riley actually gave his dimensions with how old a man he probably would be now and what size he was.
Mm-hmm. And I know there was a third person as well.
So Michael was pretty convinced that Riley remembered him, but he certainly remembered Riley.
Interesting.
And it's not like someone calls me and says, "Hey, I've been out to the mothership out near Saturn." So to me, it was a very unusual thing to even have anyone call and tell me that.
Mm-hmm.
So Michael was doing this recording with me, and on the second hour, he says how these beings moved aside, and this tall blonde man said, "Did you look confused?" And he said, "Well, I am confused. I just came out of this meeting with these elders in these purple robes, and yeah, my head is spinning. I'm confused." So they said, "Well, there's a book on Earth that tells all about us and all about you. And it's called the Book of Earth." And Michael goes, "Oh, the Book of Earth. Oh, I can remember that." And they said, "Well, it's really called the Urantia Book." And Jay, I believe that's the first time Michael's ever heard of the Urantia book. And he used to be a minister, so he's quite familiar with the Bible. But he wasn't familiar with the Urantia book, and now Michael is very familiar with the Urantia book. Jay, you've heard, I suppose, all the recordings we made.
Oh yes.
And when you do, it gives you time to listen to it and really evaluate for yourself, doesn't it, Jay?
Yes, definitely. You know that by his experiences, if you've read the Urantia book, you can tell that this guy was definitely on some kind of an architectural sphere, and his experiences are definitely relative to what the book is saying. The Frondelenk, for instance, when Michael was talking about the stomach, or he said it looked like a stomach, which was probably a living mechanism, biological entity that regulated energy, which was the power source. So that's pretty interesting on its own. And he remembered the work Frankenstein instead of Frondelenk.
Yeah, and there's really hours and hours on the website of Michael. Mm-hmm. And we did this once a week. And I really thought after the first hour, I don't know how much further we're going to be going, maybe 3 hours, I don't know. But Michael just was extremely interesting, or he is extremely interesting. And to hear him your book and how this all unfolded for him. And also his memory was coming back because they wouldn't allow him to remember, just like Riley. They didn't really allow Riley to remember.
Right.
But Riley eventually was allowed to remember, and so was Michael. And it was really a gift to have Michael on and do all those hour recordings. And then how did you find this, Jay?
Started listening to Michael's story. And that's when the Urantia book came in, a few hours in there. And then you put two and two together. That's when I started taking things a little more seriously. I said, this isn't just another abduction story. This is a little more than that. And I still remember, you know what's really interesting? I don't even know if Michael realizes it, but my very first two or three emails to Michael for questions to put on the air, I asked Michael some question, and he responded by saying, you and your wife will be participating in the coming of Jesus Christ. And I thought that was so odd. I thought, why would he say we're participating? And at that time, I didn't have broadcast Urantia or even a concept of doing anything like this. But it's so strange because here I am with broadcast Urantia. Trying to get the word out. It definitely opens your eyes. I think everybody on earth needs to read the Urantia book. Definitely should read The Coming of Tan. And really become more aware. So it has a pretty big effect on me. So
yeah, there's a section on my site, helloearth.info, that is for the Urantia connection. And in there, there's a few stories about where the Urantia book came from. And one of the stories is rather short, and one is a little longer, but it's the same story.
Are you referring to, I believe it's Stan and his wife, the Urantia book readers for 25 years that have a study group? From your recordings, by any chance?
Oh, no, I was saying that on the website, there's some stories about where the Urantia book came from. Then I'm sorry, their names aren't on the tip of my tongue right now, but because I'm involved with, I haven't been on HelloEarth.info for a few months now.
So now I know that you guys got up to hour 146, I believe. Why did you guys stop all of a sudden? Like, what went wrong?
Well, when I was, I'll just say promoting Riley, because it's probably the easiest way to understand what I was doing, because I was just getting Riley's information out there and the fact that there is a vessel out there near Saturn, and even NASA had pictures of it. And Jay has the photograph that NASA took. The first photograph just showed like a big, huge ball. And then this photograph looks like, well, they must have known their pictures were going to be taken, so they wanted to, like, I even call it, like, pop their top, because you can see the sphere is still there on the lower portion of this. It looks like an alien head upside down. But then this other object is coming out of the sphere, and that's a NASA picture out near Saturn. It's the only one we have. But anyway, I had that photograph, and I had what Riley had to say. And now I had what Michael had to say, and Michael and I were doing these recordings, and then Michael went off on this other radio show that it's the same people that bushwhacked, I'll say, Riley and I. After 10 years, well, what I didn't get to is one of the radio shows I got Riley on was WXRK in Philadelphia, I'm sorry, in New York City. And that was the radio station that Howard Stern was the host on. So anyway, that's what some people would say is the big time radio, because that's probably the largest radio station in the world, if not, I mean, for surely United States. But I don't know if any other station has so many listeners as Howard. Howard's a nice guy. He just, that's his radio show, and people listen from around the country. But anyway, Howard was going to go to Sirius Satellite Radio, and when this other radio station that had Riley, well, they're not a radio station, they're just an internet show like what I did, what Jay is doing here, that they just did anything they could to get Riley away from me, and they did. So then, now I'm recording with Michael, and Michael's off with the same crew. I ignored him for a year and a half, and after that, and then Michael started doing advertisements of them on Hello Earth, and so I started snipping it out. I snipped it out once, and I said, I'm not going to be doing this. This is ridiculous. So, unfortunately, that's where it stopped with Michael until it's going to start again, but it hasn't started, and I really don't know if it will, because I'm not totally in control anymore. Michael's off with this other, these other internet radio show, and so, Jay, that's why I stopped.
You don't have a problem with Michael wanting to come back and continue on from 146?
Oh, yeah, that would be fine. We could pick up where we left off, and that would be fine with me.
Well, Michael,
I would like to. It was something that I was doing, and just because of Howard Stern, and they think it's just going to do something for their radio show or something. So they did anything they could to try and ruin things, I guess. I don't know. But I just wasn't there anymore with talking with Michael. I listened to it. I put up with it for a year and a half, and then I just, I guess all the spark came out of me, and I just couldn't record anymore. So, you know, one week led to the next, and now it's been over a year, I suppose.
Well, Michael, if you're listening, we'd love to have you on either one of our shows, and we hope that you do decide to continue where we left off. I understand that you started exploring some interesting things about Nikola Tesla and the Venus connection. Would you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Oh, sure. Actually, I was, when I met Riley, that's one of the things that really blew my mind. Not only was he supposedly an illiterate who just couldn't really read or write, because there are a lot of people in the world like that. And if you've never grown up with people like that, you don't even know they exist. But that's one thing that really blew my mind about Riley, because he knew of Nick, not only knew of Nikola Tesla, he was telling me that he knew him personally.
Is that right?
Well, he's not old enough a fellow to know him personally. He was born in 1946, and Tesla was murdered in 1943. But Riley told me that he met Tesla out on this mothership out near Saturn. And, okay, I'm taking all this in. And he goes on and he tells me things like he had the most amazing blue eyes that he's never, ever seen. And that kind of blew my mind because, I was just getting a book by Margaret Storm. I had just read that book, and then I bump into Riley, and that book says about how Tesla was from Venus, and then he has disciples. So I was very much interested in Tesla, and when Riley came along and Becoming a Tan, I did that, and I was really hoping to be able to talk about Tesla with Riley on some of these shows, and it was sort of coming to that. And then when Michael stopped, that's when I started finally building this website about Tesla was from Venus. So I built a site called the Venus Tesla Connection, And one of his disciples was Otis T. Carr. And Otis T. Carr, Tesla asked him to bring him 4 pounds of unsalted peanuts up to his suite, which he did at the end of his work day. And then he was able to talk to Tesla, invited him into his suite, and he continued to talk to him for 3 years, and he taught him natural, I'll call it natural science. And he taught him a way of collecting electricity from the natural space forces. So all last winter, I transcribed these old radio shows that I found at Otis T. Carr's from 1948. And they're on there, and his other disciple, Arthur H. Matthews, there's a book called The Wall of Light, and that was done in the early 70s. And I don't have that totally on my website yet, and that website is the Venus Tesla Connection. But the address is hello-earth.com. It's a little different. It's hello-earth.com, and it's a hyphenated word, so there's a dash between hello and earth. But the site with Michael and Riley and the Urantia book is just hello-earth.info. So the Venus Tesla Connection is just growing a little bit at a time. And I just added a page called, I called it The Man from Venus, an automobile from the 1900s. And that's when Tesla was stopped from giving us electricity through the Earth so everyone on Earth could have free electricity. And then Otis T. Carr was stopped in 1958, and I showed it with a Ford Edsel from 1958. That's how long ago Otis T. Carr was stopped. And now this is posted on the web for people who have machine shops. They can build this and collect free electricity. It also energizes this thing that looks like a wheel, and it's on the site. It looks like a wheel, but it looks like a motor. It looks like an electric motor, but it has these six other generators inside. And also I have Tesla's instructions that he gave Otis T. Carr that Carr got a U.S. patent for, but he couldn't get a patent on a spacecraft. So he disguised it as an amusement device. And he was able to get the patent through by silly things he said in the patent, like, oh, the people in the amusement device, they can look through the floor and see the inner workings of this mechanism. But the inner workings were the Utron electrical accumulator, and that's what Tesla taught Carr. And that's what I'm presenting now on the Venus Tesla Connection, and that's nice you should mention it, Jay.
Now, I understand Tesla was murdered. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's actually a touchy subject because it involves the Nazis. And people think that, anyway, there were 50,000 of them that came to this country. And they were given new identities and just came into this country. And but one of them was Tesla's trusted assistant, was George H. Schriff. And what I didn't realize until 2007 when I found this, that there was really a George H. Schriff Jr. and a George H. Schriff Sr. Well, Senior became Tesla's assistant to spy on Tesla, and because Tesla, they found he was from Venus. because everything he did worked. And everything he said he was going to do was out of this world. And, like right now, you can go to the hardware store and buy yourself an electric drill. But in 1950, you couldn't do that. Well, maybe I'm wrong with that, but that's what Tesla did. Tesla created push-button society for us to be able to just push a button and have a lot of work done for us. And Tesla really was from Venus, and that's why I built the Venus-Tesla connection.
Now, who says he was from Venus? How did you determine that? Why did they say that this guy was from another planet? Was it because of his ability to be so advanced in his thinking as far as creating things were concerned?
Well, one thing Tesla said, he never created anything, he never invented anything, because it was always here. He just discovered them. But when he, in this, if you go to that website, the Venus Tesla Connection, and you go to Nikola Tesla's section and go down to the man from Venus, there's a paragraph in there that I pulled out of an article from 1900. And that's when Tesla, it starts out a long time ago when I was a boy. And he described how his retina had these images coming in front of his retina, which blocked his normal vision. And he also had thoughts that came into his mind that weren't his own. Mm-hmm. And this was throughout his life. So they were constantly, well, Tesla was brought here on a spaceship from Venus and given to this woman in, well, at the time it was Yugoslavia. And the woman was probably Venusian herself. And the baby wasn't really born on the spaceship, but certainly a newborn baby. And Mrs. Tesla, Tesla's mother, I forget how old she was when she could still tie three knots in an eyelash. And she was extremely mechanical, and she made many devices that helped house chores and she made many devices, so she was very special. But Tesla, in this paragraph, he just said that it was like almost confessing that these ideas weren't from him. And I just have to say that one of his disciples, Arthur H. Matthews, and if you click on Arthur H. Matthews and go into him, there's a three-part audio piece that I've transcribed where Arthur Matthews describes Tesla, and Tesla gave him the plans for this communication device to talk to spaceships. So when Kenneth Arnold in 1947, had his sighting. And that's very interesting to listen to. I should post that on my website so people can hear him tell the story on a radio show, which was fantastic to hear. Because those radio shows, they record things for history. But Kenneth Arnold had the sighting and of these craft. So Arthur Matthews up in Canada thought, well, now's the time I should build this communication device. So as soon as he had it built, he immediately received messages from a Venusian spacecraft. I believe it was on his fifth transmission with these alien beings from Venus, and that's when they told him that Tesla was brought to Earth on a spaceship from Venus.
Interesting.
And what's that, Jay?
That's interesting. You know, the Urantia book talks about a very highly populated universe and definitely civilizations that are human, that are highly advanced, existing within our solar system. So, Venus Tesla connection is not as far off as most people would think. Just like there's an architectural sphere floating around by Saturn, so Venus is very possible.
Well, the NASA had that spaceship built called Cassini, and it was launched in 1997, and it took 7 years to get to Venus, and it took those pictures, and that's one of the pictures that Jay has right on his site of that architectural sphere. And my feeling is they knew, they saw NASA was taking the pictures, so they topped their top, because it certainly is a different image than the round image of the photograph taken right before it. So, people are still saying, oh, we're still looking for aliens. Well, Tesla was from Venus. He arrived here in 1856, and he was an alien, and he got us out of ox carts, gave us electricity, but the money people didn't want to let us have electricity for free, because Tesla's devices, he kept improving upon them. So they wanted to run wires everywhere and put a meter on everybody's house. So that's what we have now. We have meters on all our houses, and everyone should be very aware of the smart meter and totally reject a smart meter on your house. And if you read about smart meters, you can see what they're doing to people, driving people crazy. Because they don't want us to be healthy, because we'll live. Anyway, that's a whole nother subject. But there really are aliens among us, and there really is this architectural world out near Saturn, and NASA really took photographs of it, and we only have a few photographs of it. We don't have all the photographs that they have of it. But we and Jay and Broadcast Urantia and all these sites are putting all these pieces of the puzzle together, enough for us to see what the big story is. And the fact that there's aliens right in our solar system, and they're walking among us now. So that's why I've been. So that kind of wraps it up, Jay. That's as far as, I just am fascinated with flying and saucers and also puzzles, because how could Riley be able to write so well? I mean, I talked to people who, well, Jim Fetzer had me on his radio show. He's a Princeton graduate. And three houses upriver here, he's the head of advanced studies in mathematics at Princeton. But Riley can talk circles around these people.
And Riley has no formal education.
Not really. I mean, you went to a real fancy school up to the 8th grade, and I'm sure the school Riley went to wasn't that fancy. He was a cotton sharecropper kid, and who knows, they may have had one book for the whole school. I don't know, but this was in the 40s when he started, or the early 50s. But Riley truly is an amazing fellow. He doesn't fit in on the earth very well. Common sense doesn't really flow through Riley very well. But he's a really good guy, and he does have a good heart. But he also has a different side of him that, when he gets frustrated, that comes out. And he also admits that he cannot drink hard liquor, because I've had difficult stories with Riley when he's gotten his hands on something beside light beer. Sort of like the Indians, they just can't drink that.
Do you still have the Coming of the Tan books available?
Oh yeah, I still have those, and but I've kind of put all that on the side. I'm going to be getting them. I've got something up my sleeve for those books, but they are amazing, and
So if somebody wants to get one, they can just go right to your site and order one from there.
yes, they can call me. Unfortunately, my credit card machine, my bank credit card machine, now they want me to jump through so many more hoops to even use the machine that they just constantly just put me out of business. So it's amazing all these new rules coming out that just you can't function anymore. So now the only way I can function with the machine is if someone calls me on the telephone personally and orders it personally with their card. They can no longer do it through my CGI form that was a secure form on the internet, and but they just want to ruin everyone's business, and that's what they've been doing in this country for a long time. They sent all the manufacturing out of the company, out of the country, and they kept changing the laws to make manufacturing in this country impossible. It's too many things to do, so they're literally ruining this country, and they've been doing it for 60 years, and people think that we just, well, put it this way, the airlines, you shouldn't think twice about getting on an airplane and flying to California, flying across the coast or flying over to Europe, or the planes are very safe. But if the U.S. government was running the airline, you'd have a much less chance of getting there. Seems like anything the U.S. government gets involved with, we have grown up knowing they can't do anything right, and that's not true. They can do things right, but they have changed the laws and ruined this country. This country back in 1899 or 1898, it was long before the Federal Reserve and long before personal income tax, good 15 years before. And this country was doing fine then. And I have a Tesla book. It's called Can a Man Live Forever? And, well, I've been involved with it. We had to move out of the place 3 times this year, so I'm a little unorganized, but I wonder if I could put my hand on that book really fast and read that first paragraph to you. Because it is about Nikola Tesla. Okay, I bought this book on eBay. It sold for 50 cents back in 1898, and it cost me $212.49. It's about the size of my little fingernail in thickness. And this first chapter of 3 lines I'll read. On December 15th, 1901, Congressman C.C. Clemens of California introduced a bill into the lower house of Congress for the establishment of the National Institute of Science. And that's where it starts. And I'd like to have this on the web someday after I get the wall of light on. And it's all about Tesla, and it's all about us, and it's all about living on this planet. And it's all about all these other planets, that there's life on all these other planets. And that's what planets are for, to have life on. Tesla wasn't the only person who came from Venus. There's other people. From Venus I Came is the name of the book that I just talked to my friend Patty about yesterday. She's going to get it to me. She said it's on the internet. It was Wendell Stevens' library that they are putting his library on the internet. So this subject matter is really broad. But they want us all to believe there are no aliens. There's no such thing as life on other planets. We're looking for water on other planets. We're looking for life. Well, life has been here from Venus. Tesla arrived in 1856. And the Venus-Tesla connection is, there's a lot in there. And it shows how to make these Tesla devices that machine shops out there can put this together for a few thousand dollars. I don't have a machine shop, and I guess I could be putting this together, but I'm doing what I'm doing, and Jay is recording on Broadcast Urantia, which is really terrific, Jay, and I hope this does really well as far as getting people to understand that there is life out there. We are not the only life in the universe, and space is not empty, and there's more than the whole world out there.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, it's a big universe.
Well, the Urantia book has a whole chapter called The Inhabitable Worlds. And, chapters like Government on a Neighboring Planet. And I would strongly suggest people read that. Well, Curtis, I believe the time is almost gone. We've got about 3 minutes.
Okay.
We're in 2012 this year.
Oh, I know. We just entered 2012 a couple days ago. I guess it was yesterday at midnight. I live on the Delaware River, and they have fireworks across the river sometimes. Just on this empty dock, people shoot off fireworks. But there's this house up on the ridge that's been there. It's always been there since I've been here, but it's like abandoned or something. Well, there's been lights on, lights on. Well, New Year's Eve, there were all these lights on, and I had a little bonfire on our patio, and had three friends over, and we're just sitting there, and they started shooting off these fireworks up at this house at midnight. And fireworks on in the United States on the 4th of July, to me, symbolizes war and killing, because the more gun power you have, the more death you put on your enemy, and you stay alive. And it's just not a real pleasant 4th of July fireworks when I see fireworks. But fireworks on New Year's Eve, bringing in 2012, was a whole different feeling. It was more of a celebration than celebrating killing and death. It was really starting something new. And this year, 2012, is a year that, well, Linda Howe, she's known to some people as Linda Moulton Howe, and she's on Coast to Coast Radio quite a bit. Well, she was here, and one day she said to me, around the new year, she said, "Can you believe 2012 is only 9 years away? It's no longer 9 years away. We're there right now." And the Mayan calendar ends on the 23rd of December, and we'll see if that has any effect on us, which it more than likely won't, but there certainly has been a lot of talk about it. And but this is 2012, and this is going to be a special year for humanity, that people like Nikola Tesla, who wanted to give us free electricity, this could even come to us this year. And what would that mean for people? Well, for me, it would mean if I never put gas in my gas tank in my entire life, I probably couldn't lift my wallet up over my head with one hand. And if I've never had to pay for electricity, or my parents never had to pay for electricity or gas or heating and cooling, or my grandparents, that would change our lifestyle for the better and quite a bit, because we'd have time to do other things. Don't you agree, Jay?
Absolutely. Well, we're almost running out of time here. Before I go, Curtis, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking the time and coming on the show. And it's been fantastic.
My pleasure.
And would you please come again?
Oh, yeah. We'll do this again. We can, Riley's interesting, and where this all came about is kind of interesting. But just the fact that there's life out there, and there's life here on this planet, and every day is a gift to us. I don't know what January the 1st was like where you were, but it was a beautiful day here, and we just hope it's going to be a good year this year. And if we can get Tesla's free energy device into people's hands, here and there, and if you can ever rent a movie called Who Killed the Electric Car, please rent that movie. You'll see that, if I could say that, do I have a couple minutes, Jay?
Yes, go ahead.
Who Killed the Electric Car is the name of the movie, and you can rent it on a DVD. And you'll see in California, they had a mandate in 1990 to, but anyway, 1990, they had the electric, I wasn't ready to talk about this, but the electric car mandate. And they said within 8 years, here it is. All right, it's called the Zero Emissions Vehicle Mandate of 1990. And they said by 1998, which was 8 years away, they said 2% of the cars sold in California had to be electric. And by the year 2001, it was supposed to be 5% of the cars had to be electric in the state of California, sold in the state of California. And by the years 2003 to 2008, 10% of the cars have to be electric. Now, that's not really a big stretch. From 1990 to 2008, so that's 18 years that only 10% of the cars had to be electric. And the California killed its electric car mandate April 24th, 2003. It was abolished. And who signed that paper? Andrew Card. So rent that video, and you'll see those people love their electric cars. And they try to get everyone to realize that no one liked the electric car, but everybody loved it. And I enjoyed that video so much, I went out and bought myself a copy. So that's what I recommend, you getting that video, seeing that, and build Tesla's device for collecting electricity from the natural space sources. And Jay, thanks for having me on.
You're welcome, and we'll have you on again real soon.
Okay.
You take care now.
Thanks, Jay. See you.
Bye-bye.